see you coming back in here with dirty jerseys. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jerseys.
How could anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Who's going to win the kickout? Who has the confidence? A long one out to the centre. Breaking ball. Leitrim haven't won back. Can Leitrim win a ball point? On the 50-yard line. They're coming. McGovern has it. Inside to the substitute. This can win it for Leitrim. It's kicked in. Leitrim leads. Leitrim have taken the lead. In Gaelic Park in New York. Noah Plunkett has kicked it over the bar. And Leitrim, who were dead and buried. Every 8 seconds, Leitrim lead by a point. Leitrim are out of the championship, into the quarterfinals, and they're about to survive. Leitrim, 19 points, New York 115, and Leitrim, it looks like they have survived by the skin of their teeth. It's all over, it's all over. Leitrim have survived by the skin of their teeth.
Oh, the sound of summer. That is the brilliant Willie Hegarty from Shannonside FM, who I think we all found ourselves listening to at least in the last few minutes and an extra time as Leitrim made a miraculous comeback. Small little Leitrim with them don't even have traffic lights and they beat the county the size of, county and city and state the size of New York on Sunday. It was unbelievable. You're welcome to the so-called Weaker podcast, Balls of Ease weekly GEA show. It's Mick McCarthy here alongside Mark Farrelly.
Yes.
And Mick. Gavin Cooney.
How are you getting
Mark
on?
Farrelly, of course, colleague of Willie Hegarty. I once did score updates on Shannonside Northern Sound at the same time as Willie Hegarty, which was, if you were trying to get across two polar opposites, you had the excited Willie, all polished, you know, experienced broadcaster, was doing some Roscommon under 21 game. I was doing Leitrim against Meath in the under 21 league. And I don't remember what it's called. It's called the Hastings Cup, isn't it? Or is it under 16? Anyway, no. I can't remember, but I was doing that one. I did three score updates, managed to get the score wrong on all three of the updates. Right.
Wait, did the score wrong? Like, how badly wrong?
Oh, like I missed a goal while I was on the phone for one of them. I then remember said, no, wasn't the third one? I didn't get it wrong, but I was just giving an update. And I went, and then Leitrim got a point to bring them right back into it. I don't know why I said that, because the point only brought them back to like 9 points down. It was like 4 minutes to go. So I was like, in a sort of a way. But then I'm like, right, thanks for that, Mark. Now, Willie.
two things on Willie Hegarty. Firstly, he's a much younger man than you might imagine.
Yeah.
He's... About you Mark's don't always age. About Mark's age.
No, I think he's in his. I'd say, well, he's what, 40s now, early 40s, late 30s, early.
I don't know. Probably late. Secondly, 40s. Like, I know there was a lot of moaning that New York Leitrim wasn't on TV, and while some people may have a point, the best way to follow that game is via Willie Hegarty. So absolutely right not to put that game on TV. Hegarty's one of the very great men at the GA, the best way to follow those games.
It was brilliant. I found myself, honestly, like I was walking around my house. I couldn't be, as the best GA in radio will always make you do, you couldn't possibly be in a static position. I was in every room. I was walking around. I was on my phone. I was making sure I was in good internet so I wouldn't drop out. I started putting on speakers, Bluetooth speakers and all for a finish. I was so into it. I don't know if I would have got as into that game if I was watching Marty on TV.
Definitely.
In a kind of a weird looking Gaelic grounds. And I think it's important to mention some of the moaning that's been going on this week. It's a very seasonal thing. New York's opening game, the opening game of the football championship, which takes place in New York, has never been on television.
No.
And there's been a lot, the fixtures come out this week. We'll talk about them in a while. There's very few provincial football games on television, only three outside of the finals. It's kind of mad. That's a separate issue than New York and Leitrim not being on TV.
Yeah,
I don't know where this has come from.
Yeah.
And the best thing about Hegarty's commentary was you didn't actually need Shannonside to hear it because all the mics were so close in that press box. He was audible over every broadcast there was.
I don't know if it's that the mics are so close that Willie's so loud. You're completely right about what you're saying about Marty not enjoying that as much if you're actually watching the match, because I don't know, like, it was definitely nail-biting, but I remember listening to the last few minutes of normal time and then the first 7 or 8 minutes of extra time when I was in the car, and there wasn't a single score in it. Like, I really made it sound like there was, like, you know, non-stop action.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't watch it. My eyes, it's too intense. It was like there was nothing happening.
When Leitrim came back in normal time, or was it like the end of extra time? I can't remember. But Roscommon. I don't know where I'm getting them from. New York had another chance to go back ahead, so they'd been clawed back, and then they had a chance to win it or equalize. I can't remember if it's normal time or full time. And Willie made it sound like the most exciting thing ever. And then I saw the clip of it, and it was just a throwaway chance, like a kick of the ball from 50 yards. That had no, it wasn't a chance. Like, you know, it was just a time was running out. But again, I'm not saying that Willie was stretching the truth or anything like that. He was just caught up in the drama of the game. And I don't know, there's nothing better than championship hurling or football on the radio, on local radio, yeah, with a good commentator.
Like, yeah. One last thing from this game before we plug ahead on what's on this week's show. Andy Williams played for New York in that game. He has also played championship football with Leitrim and Longford. So I don't know if you guys off the top of your head know of anyone who's played championship with three teams. Or if
I don't, but someone tweeted you.
Yeah, and I've left my phone charged in the other room, so I've forgotten it. So sorry.
Someone was playing for London, was it, at the weekend?
I don't know. So any listeners out there who know of players who've played championship with three different
teams, either know or you have Gavin's phone at the moment. Yeah. Or check Gavin's Twitter timeline. Also, can I give a shout out to my main man, Dara Rooney, who actually spotted that aforementioned under-21 league game between Meath and Leitrim. But he came back on, was taken off, came back on, and got, I think, set up the point. Got the point to bring them back within a point in extra time, and then set up the point that levelled.
Yeah, because it's worth actually talking about that game properly. I mean, New York, we joked about the giant killing earlier on, but they almost did it. You know, they were 3 points up in extra time. I thought that was it then. I was starting to wonder whether Paddy Power were going to pay out for over the 90 minutes or just the 70, you know. I thought they had it, and I thought they had it in normal time as well, and Clark was brilliant, and they played really well. But, you know, at some stage, you have to give Leitrim some credit. They're not the biggest or best team in the world either, and they just weren't beaten that day, you know, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, probably, no, it's impressive results.
Probably less funding than New York.
Oh, I'd imagine they do, yeah.
Yeah, what is, I mean, although, what is it?
I'd imagine
grand.
Harder to get lads to fully commit to the 20 six
grand
nights
a year,
of training.
Jamie Leitrim Clark said they're flat out going since December. Like, I know some counties are flat out going since October here or whatever, but that's still, like, I mean, it's... But I'd say that, given plenty of commitment to it.
For one game, as it generally turns out to be. Sligo also got the job done against London. Kieran Deely was talking about that after the game. He was like disappointed that they didn't really fulfil their potential. But we'll get to all of those things and this week's games and everything in a minute. But I should, 15 minutes into the show, tell you what's coming up on today's so-called Weaker Podcast. Because delighted to say that we have a really special interview with good friend of the show, good friend of balls.ie in general, Mickey Burke.
The Honey Badger.
The Honey Badger himself. Not Mickey Rourke, as I was, found myself saying when I was talking to Gavin about this earlier. Meath footballer, of course. They're out against Gavin's beloved Longford in a couple of weeks, but also a former hurler and a hurling man in general. And he's going to tell us how the county is finding Joe McDonagh Cup fever.
Yeah, big match this weekend. Meath against Westmeath, the local derby, which is, as Mickey pointed out, I didn't even realise this because it's the curtain raiser too. Wait for it. The Auburn Cup final.
The Auburn Cup final, which we've been waiting for as long as this podcast has existed, which is now 15 weeks.
Yeah.
And also, once again, not on TV.
Yeah.
Backwards. But backwards.
We did make a claim to GA that it was absolutely ridiculous that the Auburn Cup final wasn't being played as a doubleheader with the Westmeath hurling game, to give the hurling a bit of credit. And fair play to them, they've done it. Now, in fairness, it's a different hurling competition that they're playing in.
That's how long it's taken to happen.
But I'm delighted about it. I'm looking forward to a bit of Auburn Cup fever to go along with Joe McDonagh Cup fever. So we'll have Mickey for you in a little while. We also have a bit of a Leinster Senior Football Championship special, because although the Connacht Football Championship is basically in full swing at the moment, and we'll have the start of Ulster this week as well with Mark's beloved Cavan and Donegal.
Donegal now officially a so-called weaker county, and Cavan no longer a so-called weaker county given
our Division 1 and 2 statuses. Yeah, but the first round of the Leinster Championship is on, and this is where a lot of our teams kind of come into the championship. So we have Laois versus Wexford, we have Offaly versus Wicklow, and we've Louth versus Carlo this weekend. And we're going to hear from John Sugru, the Laois manager. We're going to hear from Brendan Keeley, the Offaly former Kerry goalkeeper, who's now Offaly goalkeeping coach, is that right to say, Gavin? And we have Andy MacDonald, Louth player. So we're going to hear from all of them today. So this is a pretty packed show that we wasted 15 minutes waffling at the start of. Mark, before we get to all that, where are you going to take us?
I'm going to take you around the weaker counties.
Good man.
We really get a sting for that. We have a sting for it.
What is that feeder? Is it what he's singing?
Yeah.
It's from the RT 2002 World Cup montage. Yeah,
I don't know why it just moved my head.
This will be playing as we're talking.
Peter, not allowed to claim royalties on that.
They are if they hear this.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
There won't be much stopping them.
Feeder are big listeners to the so-called week. Anyway, go on. Let's never get on.
That's the feeder company in Cavan who...
go away. That's Ennis's Feeds you're thinking of. Underdogs is coming back.
Yes, I know.
This is TG Carrey's show.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yes. That's I don't know. It's got nothing to do with weaker county. Well, I suppose it's so-called weaker players.
Yeah,
you have, if you're a so-called weaker player who can't make a county team out there, they're holding trials throughout May. You can check out online to see when a trial is coming to a GAA ground near you.
Are you going to put yourself forward?
No, I put if there was an Underdogs Killincare, where it's like for lads who can't get into the Killincare senior team,
and then the Underdogs play against Killincare.
No, as in there's like the other way. Underdogs are people who can't get into their county team,
yeah,
and then they get onto the Underdogs team, and hopefully, like Kieran Donaghy, they end up then getting on their county team. So you could have an Underdogs Killincare for lads who can't get into the Killincare club team.
Is that not called the Killincare junior team?
Yeah, I'm not sure many people are going to watch this.
There's no point in me going for the...
Yeah, no, I wouldn't watch
Underdogs that. Underdogs is a feckin' great show, yeah. And it's such a good idea to bring it back. It's time enough as well, because they couldn't keep going with it at the time, because you've got the same lads every year, and whoever's going to make it is going to make it then. But now enough time's passed, there's nobody still playing from back then except for Kieran Donaghy. And I can't wait for it. It's going to be brilliant. It's on TG Carr, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it should be brilliant. Where else we go now? Wicklow. This isn't as good news story as the Underdogs. Wicklow held, every county seems to be doing it, sort of a meet and greet, meet your Wicklow playing heroes, ahead of their championship match this weekend. They held it on, I think it was Friday. Two people showed up to it.
Oh no!
Yeah,
oh, no,
it
Jesus.
Did. At the start, there was only two. I think it rose to 15. But Martin Fitzgerald was chatting to there was an interview. He's the Wicklow chairman and the Wicklow people saying that they're going to have to review it for next year. They might hold a blitz or something to try and get some young people up to
How
it.
How were there only two people there?
But two people showed up to
Did
the,
they
to the start.
Advertise it at all? Like surely, if you advertise it at all,
I don't
someone
know.
At least brings their family.
Wicklow doesn't seem to be. Wicklow football is not in a great place. I know John Evans. Is trying to inject a bit of belief back in, but
sorry, can I say this is how John Evans is injecting belief? They're playing Offaly this weekend, and the winner plays Dublin and Leinster. And he described the winner's game against Dublin is like a fly being killed with a sledge.
I set you up.
So that's
that.
The optimism that's buzzing around Offaly at the moment, or buzzing around Wicklow at the moment.
Exactly.
But that's awful about the meet and greet, though.
Yeah, like we're going to chat to Mickey Burke.
Like that's not
on.
The player's fault. Like that's somewhere else down the line.
Yeah, we're going to chat to Mickey about Meath hurlers had one as well ahead of the Joe McDonagh Cup, and there were 300 kids at.
Yeah,
they showed, 300 kids showed
but
up.
You see, that's clubs and schools and everything else that has to organise that, and just you need the right people with the right enthusiasm for. So many people, for so few people to be there for 2 to 15 or whatever it is, that means that nobody did that. Not one person organised their under-10s team to come and meet them or anything like that. There was no organisation at grassroots in the county or even at county board level. I can't actually believe that would happen and they would still actually have the organisation to get the players to somewhere.
That doesn't.
It's really shocking. Like it's really disappointing that these lads would be kind of faced with that, you know?
And it is brilliant. Like, I mean, kids go nuts for it. They absolutely love it. Like, imagine when you were younger meeting lads. Like, now we mightn't think a whole pile of it, but if you're a child, they're massive.
What day of the week was it on?
Cynics now.
I'm not sure. I imagine it was on Friday. I don't know any of the other ones were on Fridays anyway. So
That's really disappointing.
That's rubbish. Longford did one after the National League game, their final National League game, which they fucking missed out in promotion by a last minute point against Fermanagh. It was a very dubious free, if we keep that on the record. But they did it after the game and it was largely successful. And in fairness, the players went after a very disappointing game. But I was just making the point that maybe that's a better time to do it than a random Friday where two people
it's
are
also,
free.
We need the intro, like, I know some counties double it up as well as a media event for so the local papers and local websites are coming to do it.
Yeah, like I mean there's a discussion there that I mean we've talked about enough that we might not need to get into right now, but like if this game against Offaly was being treated as a bigger deal and like, you know, we're talking about this is the exciting start to the championship, but where is that excitement? You know, where is that being portrayed? Because it is great. Like I mean they're having their first championship game in 11 months, I'd say, for Wicklow, you know, and it's like right, let's go and try and beat Offaly and get to play Dublin. Like, I mean, I don't know, like, John Evans, obviously that is true what he's saying about Dublin, but is that really giving the, like, you know, it's not as if, like, oh yeah, we're really looking forward to the Leinster Championship. They're not. Yeah. They don't want to beat Offaly. And that's their excuse. Usher, what was the point in going, we're only going to beat by 30 points to Dublin?
Yeah.
Something needs to change there.
Elsewhere, Willie Barrett, the referee development chairman. Gavin, you probably know more about this than me. There was a big talk.
Wouldn't bet on it.
There was a conference in Croke Park this week.
Where so the head of the referees, Willie Barrett, and the CCCC gave a briefing to GA journalists, and I stumbled in accidentally in Croke Park.
You just love any sort of administrative meeting or press conference or what would you call it, annual report release.
Do you think
just
Gavin is actually moonlighting as a GA administrator? And turns up at all these things, and in the guise of, oh, I'll just go for, I'll tell Balls at E that I'm covering it for them, but actually he's media managing.
Oh yeah,
for the I am in it.
Gavin
is
right.
Taking down Gavin's little black book, and he's taking down all the little boxes, he's ticking them, trying to discuss things of what do I need to do to become GAA president? Right, I need to sit on this committee. Yeah. I need to agree with this man, Willie Barrett's interpretation of referees rules. All this different stuff. But anyway,
always have the right number of C's.
Exactly. CCCCC. Gavin CCC. Gavin Cooney has now changed his name to Gavin Cooney, spelled CCCCCCCCCOONY. Three O's. Anyway,
what did Willie Barrett say?
Anyway, Willie Barrett was speaking to the media afterwards, and he was talking about Belize, how they're going to come down harder in Belize this year, and he finally gave us the definition. Didn't temporarily ask for the Malie to be properly defined.
Yeah, they brought out his motion to Congress, and it was thrown out.
Well, his Malie, he's defined it in five words. Can you guess what those words are?
Schmazel?
No.
Don't be at that. Is that five words? I don't be at. Yeah,
it's not far off.
Is it?
He says, "What is Malie making a bad situation worse?"
Ah, yeah.
Okay. That's
a good definition.
That makes sense. Like, yeah.
This is quite a good day. Now
it's a bit wide. Like, I mean, there's lots of things that you can make a bad situation. Like, you could come on
insulting someone.
If you're losing by 10 points and you come on and you get sent off, you could be making a bad situation.
Arriving to awake in fancy dress. I mean, that's, you've seen the Only Fools and Horses episode. That's a dreadful thing. You've had a bad situation worse. I don't know if you call that Malie.
It's too wide a definition, but it's not inaccurate for what he meant.
This is quite an enjoyable morning, actually. I do like going to Croke Park for these things, to be honest, because Croke Park is a fundamentally very cool place, and they were setting up the stage for the Rolling Stones concert, so it was very cool. So they gathered all those media people, and Patrick Doherty, involved in games development or games administration in the GA, they played a load of clips from the National League of various flashpoints and incidents that they've reviewed at referees since the end of the National League, and as a kind of a preview to the Championship. And they gave us little zappers and asked us to vote on what the right decision is. And the main thing to deduce from it all is that none of us know anything. Like, I mean, there was the massive rouse in the room about how and harsh. There was one argument about a harsh black card on a Kildare player for tackling Aidan O'Shea from the league. And the argument went on a good 10 minutes. And there were arguments about the merits of the rule itself, about who was involved, and it got quite heated. It was quite good.
Shows you how hard it is to actually referee a game.
It's live game. Like,
and by the way, we also got about 10 replays.
Yeah,
of each. And for most decisions, I found myself relying on what the referees' hand movements, because sometimes they didn't edit that out. So there was one where you're meant to spot like a very furtive trip. But the referee, thankfully, kind of kicked his leg out after he blew the whistle. But it's interesting from the point of view that the nature of some of the incidents raised, because you often see this every championship, is that the referees will focus on certain things. Obviously, it was the black card a couple of years ago. In hurling, it was interference with the helmet, like last year.
Yeah.
So some of the things that will be refereed quite heavily this year, football players have to wear mouthguards. That's going to be more and more. That's going to be more and more prevalent, and there will be. You might well see a player in the championship at least booked for not wearing a mouthguard, and that has to be in their mouth. Like, they did make that you can't. They just put it on the top of their sock or something. Has to be in their mouth. A concern as well about melees in both football and hurling, but head high tackles and collisions across football and hurling, they will be refereed a lot more strictly this year. And even if it's accidental, so say particularly in hurling, someone will stoop to pick up the ball and then someone will come in with a slightly late shoulder,
knee
and they might
the
not,
or whatever.
Might not mean to hit it with their head. But it's probably a red card. It'll always be down to the referee's decision. But as soon as there is any contact with the head, you're dicing with a red card.
That's going to be a nightmare to referee in Gaelic football, because there's already an issue with players like this thing of a tackle around the neck, which is when you put your hand in to make the tackle isn't around the neck, but the player has suddenly stooped to that level, and then it's like, oh, round the neck, yellow card. And it's like, geez, what are you meant to do here? Like, the reaction of this forward, he's so tuned in to trying to win that free, that they're, or sometimes they're just trying to, like, if you're turning, you know, on a, if you're a corner forward ever and you're turning tightly, you are going to kind of lean in that way anyway. And it's it, you often will see players getting yellow cards for a high tackle around the neck. Yeah. Which is,
we were showed a clip of Jermot O'Connor's kind of wild swinging arm against a Galway player, I can't remember, that caught him pretty much at the chin, like it was quite high. The referee gave a yellow card. The referee should have given red, is what, and it was like a second yellow, and then he went. It should have been a straight red card.
Yeah, so sorry, that I didn't kind of swing him. Yeah. It's more, sorry, I just mean the one of where you're kind of behind a player and you're trying to get your arm around him to get, you know, get the hand in and get the ball. And sometimes they are high in the foul line. Sometimes actually would a forward would grab the arm.
But like, what will happen? There will be discussions at some point in the summer that you get, there'll be a high tackle that doesn't look deliberate, particularly in hurling, and it will be a red card, and people will say it should be yellow and it's harsh, but that is what the referees have been told.
That's what we'll look out for this year, because there's going to be plenty of it, I'm sure, by Sunday. We'll already be talking about five of these instances. Mark, what else we got?
That's pretty much it. We've got plenty of other counties to get around in our Leinster preview, so we'll hold off.
We'll get to Mickey Burke in a minute. I just want to talk briefly, though, about the coverage of, there was a lot, we mentioned the TV coverage of New York, and it not being on TV, I should say, and how I kind of think that that's a little bit of an unfair, you know, especially Diggs at RTE, who had absolutely no choice at it. I kind of think that's unfair. One of the things, though, that was definitely noticeable was how little coverage the first round of the John McDonagh Cup got. There was four games. It's an interesting competition. Two of the games were close. And, you know, in the Sunday papers, if you look at it, there's a lot of criticism came for the Sunday Independent, who had a little corner of one page, whereas it was four full pages, broadsheet pages of about cricket. I actually don't begrudge it to cricket. It's not as if they get too much coverage, and they've got the first test match next week, and it's brilliant. But I just don't understand why there isn't a little bit more being made of this, especially on a quiet GEA week. You've got a lot of GEA riders. There's only two games on, one's in New York, one's in London. The Sunday Times madly had, like, you know, Westmead and Mead win is their exact headline in the tiny little corner. It doesn't say what competition it is. Mead were absolutely hammered by Antrim. Obviously, it's a typo and it's a sub-editing mistake in the report, which I think was by Declan Bogue, which is perfectly fine, obviously, and no, like, didn't claim that Mead won that game. Yeah. It wasn't like a drunk reporter or anything like that. But I just don't understand how those mistakes are made so casually, because it's basic lip service. You're better off not being in the paper.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you said.
Yeah, hands up though, in terms of, or say, hold my own hand up in terms of the attention I probably would have paid to the Joe McDonagh Cup before doing. I know it wasn't the round last year, but say if it was, without doing this podcast, yeah, probably would have been there. And also the thing is that we come on an awful lot and give out about the coverage that these games are getting, which is in the fake mainstream media. Like, we've got, you also have to take into account that there's probably more people reading stuff online than buying some of the Sunday papers.
Yeah.
So, like, there's plenty of coverage there.
No, I think
the advertisers out there, yeah.
I think that's a fair point, to be honest, and it's an important one as well. And it's not even to have a dig at they're basically two different instances that happened in the Sunday papers that came up as a bit of a talking point this week. But I think you're right. Like, I think there's a lot more to it than what the Sunday Independent is doing or anything like that. There's a general sense that these games can be interesting and can be covered. If they were on TG Carr, for example, would people watch them? People will watch live sport. Would that make it a bigger deal in the counties involved? I don't know. I'm just saying, there's lots that, more that can be
so
done.
Given those
the GEA are the people that need to be doing it.
Given those lower games to a TG Carr or like a TG Carr GEA Go or TG GEA Go join thing, that's the idea, actually. Particularly give it to TG Carr.
Online.
They definitely do it. And TG Carr would at least stream it on YouTube, if not even on their channels.
9,000 people watched our the ping pong final of our office tournament ping pong final there a couple of weeks ago.
I was fucking great though.
Which make one. But like, there is something in it. Like, and it is that thing of, like, once you start paying attention to it, you start finding the storylines and everything. And even
knowing,
if you look,
the players.
Morris did, we have to mention Morris every week in this podcast. It's part of his contract. He did an interview with, I think it was four different people involved in four different counties out of the Joe McDonagh Cup. It was fascinating.
Yeah, really, really good.
And then
because
you read about Westmeath or wherever it is, then you're actually interested to find out how they got on that weekend.
Yeah. And we should say that Westmead did beat Laois, which was a huge win for them, you know, and that's like that puts Laois under a lot of pressure already to get out. Antrim had a big win over Meath, as we mentioned, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. And Carlow beat Kerry. So that's actually wide open now. Westmeath play Meath this weekend. Massive win. And Leash play Kerry. And the loser of that's in massive trouble already. Yeah. It's an interesting tournament. It really For is sure. an interesting tournament. I'd love to see more of it. I don't mean to blame specific papers and stuff like that. It's like it's not as if we're sending people to do massive features on every game either. You know what I mean? And there is a resources issue across there. It's just something that I feel like that if it got its due would have a lot more interest across the country, you know?
And it's got a direct correlation with the Liam McCarthy this year because the finalists in Joe McDonagh Cup go up and have preliminary quarterfinals at home against the third place sides.
Teams in Leinster and Munster. Yeah, so interesting stuff. Anyway, we did mention we are going to be talking more about hurling in the Joe McDonagh Cup right now because earlier on myself and Mark caught up with Meade's Mickey Burke, who will be playing in the Leinster Football Championship this year, but has a bit of history with Meade hurling too.
It's about those four keywords: commit, focus, believe, and you can achieve. Carlow have achieved after 33 years in the wilderness, and well done.
Right, so as we mentioned earlier, there's a big game coming up for the Meade footballers in a couple of weeks with Longford in the Leinster quarterfinal. Mickey Burke, a regular friend of the site and of the show, will be playing that day and will be part of things that day. What he isn't part of at the moment, though, is Meade's run in the Joe McDonagh Cup and their attempt to get into the Liam McCarthy Cup. But he has hurled with Meade in the past. Mickey, you're not hurling at the moment, are you?
No, I'm not hurling with the boys at the moment now. Look, I suppose getting a bit older and that kind of thing as well. So maybe in the future, though, we'll see. We'll see if it comes about. I definitely want to say no to it. I have a great love of hurling.
Meade is a funny place in terms of, I think people would often see from the outside of a county that doesn't really have too much hurling, not a very successful senior team anyway. But it's actually one of those. It's actually a thriving sport within the county, isn't it? There's a lot of clubs that would play hurling and a lot of dual players.
Yeah, there is. I suppose, kind of, as you look at the map of Mead, I suppose it'll be South Mead that will be kind of hurling territory. A lot of clubs in very close proximity, you know, we're very close to neighbouring clubs, kind of 4 or 5 miles between each team. So familiarity kind of breeds contempt, and the senior hurling championship matches can be pretty feisty affairs. It's very similar to North Kerry kind of thing. The way they kind of have their hurling stronghold there in North Kerry, would have been talking to a good few of the boys, would have played Shinty with them, and the Shinty Internationals, the Kerry lads, and it's very similar to there. There's kind of a pocket of hurling in North Kerry, and it's the same here in Meade. South Meade is very much hurling territory, you know. Like the people down here that kind of wouldn't have any interest in football, which people might find strange, but even in my own village of Longwood, a lot of lads would be, you know, hurling would be their favourite sport.
Yeah, Mickey, even at underage level, there seems to be a massive uptake in the interest in hurling around Meade. Is it, I know you're saying it's a stronghold in South Meade, but is it something that's spreading around the county, or what is the level of interest these days in it?
Yeah, like I was saying, most of the clubs would be in South Meade, but like there is clubs up North Meade, like Kilskier, Moylock, Kells, kind of right up North Meade, that are putting huge effort in. I think, like, since the lads won the Christy Ring in 2016, there's really been a big drive at underage, and credit goes to all the coaches in there in Dungannon and in Meade. I know they're putting in massive effort. So there's definitely more kids with sticks going around with hurlies and that, and that's important too, because I'd be kind of from the school of thought of having the two codes doing well. But yeah, there has been a big boost in the last couple of years, and winning kind of does that. And I suppose the lads of the senior team have winning that Christy Ring competition, and with the two games and that kind of brought the whole thing on and brought a bit of glamour to it.
Yeah, winning it twice, as it is. But
winning it twice, yeah.
You know, so you've just being involved yourself, as you said, like that things have got a little, you know, with the Christy Ring Cup and stuff like that, it's got a little bit better. Have you now, you mentioned you're of the school of thought that both codes doing well is good for the GAA and the county in general. I've talked to a few Meade people who are more football, and they definitely don't share that attitude. It's like they wouldn't even openly admit it, but you just know from talking to them that there's that little bit of a, Jesus, hurling's getting in the way, we can't be playing club games, all the bloody hurlers are trying, you know. Have you come across much of that, or probably people know better when they're talking to you, I suppose, and not to give off that too much?
Maybe. No, but I definitely understand what you're saying. Like, look, there's no point sugarcoating. Like, Meath is a football county, and a lot of people rather football. But, like, I just don't, personally, I don't get it. Maybe it's because, like, I grew up in a kind of a hurling area where, well, both were treated very equally in our club, and it just gave me a great appreciation for the two. So, I just think, you know, try and get your county to be as good as you can in both codes and in all grades. And I personally wouldn't kind of, you know, have a preference for one or the other, even though I'd probably be known as a footballer. But I think they're both great sports. And yeah, I would get that here and there, but people maybe are a bit more coy when they're talking to me about it, I suppose.
Would there be a big rivalry now with Westmeath? We're going into this game. I think it was a close game last year in the Blade. Meath obviously got a bit of a bad defeat last week, but is there that sort of local thing that you'd have in the football as well?
Yeah, I would think so. Bumping into them a couple of times down through the years, there would have been a gap of a long time where I suppose Westmeath would have been in a higher division than our boys. But after last week's game, like, the lads have a lot to play for, and there'd be a big crowd down there in Mullingar. It's before the Auburn Cup final as well, which will bring a bit more of a crowd to it. And yeah, there would be, like, be huge rivalry there between the two counties. Our half parish here, Killeen, would hit kind of Raharney direction down there. So Raharney's a really, really good club, and like Westmeath have a lot of strong clubs there, you know, but Tommy Doyle there from Loch Lane, and Derek McNicholas. So there would be, look, border counties, there's always rivalry.
What do you think of the Joe McDonagh Cup as an idea overall? I mean, it seems to have gotten a lot of counties of a similar level together, and there's actually a bit of excitement around it. There's a lot of, like we're saying, between, we've got Meath, Westmeath, Antrim, Carlow, they're all around that level. Leash as well. There's some great games already. We're only a week into it.
Yeah, no, I think it's very good. Like, our boys are under a bit of pressure now after last week's game, but I think in general it's great. A lot of teams are playing at the same level, and it's only going to bring, we're probably not, you know, be good, and we're not good enough to be maybe playing the likes of Dublin or, you know, obviously Kilkenny or Galway or any of them teams in Leinster at the moment. So you just got to, I think it's a great initiative that the Joe McDonagh Cup, you know, for the like of us, me, Carlow, Leash, all them teams, and ourselves, it'll be good for us, and hopefully the boys can get a couple of wins and kind of stay in the grid.
Yeah, hopefully they do. When you're involved in the team, I'm just interested in kind of what we're talking about there, about the development of the likes of Westmeath, Carlow, Meath. When you're involved in the panel, what are the kind of personal ambitions? What kind of things are talked about? Like, I mean, obviously it's short term. Are we going to win the next match? Can we get out of the grade? Can we stay in the grade? Whatever it might be. But do people in Meath, or hurlers in Meath, I suppose, more specifically, see a future where, like, you know, maybe it's 20 years down the line instead of 1 year down the line that they're a contender? Or is, like, are those kind of ambitions ever talked about?
I suppose where Meath are coming from for the last few years, we're in a low grade of National Hurling League, so the boys got out of that, which was very important. And I suppose you kind of got to do maybe what it... I suppose it's got to be a short-term goal, maybe kind of do what maybe Leash or Antrim are doing, them kind of teams. And I think getting up and playing these counties in the National Hurling League, sometimes the start of the year nearly is more of a priority than the summer, if that makes any sense. You know, like, you're getting up and you're playing against those quality teams. I think you probably showed last weekend, with all due respect to the boys who's in there, like, Antrim had been playing, you know, stiffer opposition in the league. Like, I know that, you know, they only lost to Galway by a couple of points. Galway wouldn't have worried too much about it. They're probably hardly back training, you know, but they're only back in the holidays. But, it, you know, they were playing those kind of teams in Limerick, and it just shows the, you know, the speed of thought and the speed of hurling. But I suppose for me, maybe just to be a kind of a relatively solid, you know, county in Leinster would be a really good achievement over the next few years, considering where we came from. You know, I was called in as a 16-year-old into the squad by Michael Dignan, and like Meath had a really good year that year. We played Offaly in the qualifiers in Nab and played Dublin. Now, I didn't get a run, but I was on the bench. But things kind of have fallen down from that, but they're starting to come back again now with the Christy Ring win and winning the league. So I just think it's important that we get up maybe a grade or two again in the National Hurling League, and being a solid outfit in Leinster would be really good, I think.
You mentioned as well you playing Shinty for Ireland in previous years. What was that like to represent your country? It's one of those, the Shinty probably mightn't get as much attention as the international rules, but it's definitely a big deal to get the honour being called up.
Oh yeah, God, it was brilliant. Probably one of the nicest things that ever happened to me, like on a hurling field, you know, to get picked for that, and just to get to, you know, room with the Bonnermar probably for 3 years on it, and just to get to know him, and you know, getting little nuggets of information about what Tip were doing or what he was doing, and something I took very seriously, trained very hard for it. Obviously, you can't kick the ball or you can't handle the ball, and it's a wild enough game, but it's the only time you can play for Ireland in that sport in hurling. So it was absolutely brilliant. Luckily got picked for Leinster as well, but and the Rail of the Cup. But I think that year was the storm hit Galway in around Christmas time, and the second thing was called off, so I didn't get to play for it. But playing on the Shinty was brilliant. They were great trips, now I have to say.
How did you balance when you were on the Meath hurling team in terms of training, balance training between football and hurling? Was there any sort of conflict there, or was it something that was easy enough to keep on the road?
At times there was a bit of conflict. Like, I'm not going to lie, I probably mixed the two of them maybe for the guts about 10 years, as much as I could. But generally, the rule of thumb was, kind of did all my training with the footballers. If there was a hurling match, you know, coming up the weekend, I'd try and get to hurling training. And, you know, if there was a gym session, we'll say for the footballers, on the week of a hurling match, I'd also go to the hurling training. So, but like, you know, during the day, I'd be going to the hurling wall as much as I could down the road in Boards Mill, which would be probably about 4 or 5 miles away. And, you know, I'd be going there at lunchtime and trying to keep my eye in. And I have a decent eye in that, you know, some lads, if they put the stick away and let dust grow on it, they'd come back and their touch would just be completely off. Mine isn't too bad. It just takes me a couple of weeks to get back into it. But it's definitely not easy. You're definitely putting more strain on yourself. You might have to play two games in 2 days over a weekend. But I've kind of always the opinion, play as much as I can for as long as I can.
Is there anything, like, I mean, you see Keith Higgins this year taking some time out of the footballers, and they've obviously come so close to winning All-Ireland so many times. He takes some time out and goes playing hurling very successfully for Mayo for a while. Do you, as someone that's done both, see any kind of benefits from that? Will he come back a little bit fresher in the summer now?
I think he will, yeah. I think he will. You know, he's probably not, you know, doing the 5-6 nights a week hard graft with the Mayo footballers, we'll say. He's going back, he's keeping his eye in. He's keeping nice and fresh, and you know, he's not doing that massive kind of load of training. So I think Keith will come back. I played against Keith before, and he's probably one of the best hurlers that I've ever. I think he's one of the only few Mayo men to ever win a Railway Cup medal with Connacht, and absolutely brilliant hurler, fantastic. But I think it'll do him the world of good. He played all the league games. He won a National League as well with them this year. So yeah, I think there's probably a lot to be said to it. But it's good, probably communication between the two managements. You know, Stephen Rotcher just had, there was good trust there. And, you know, he knew that Keith wouldn't be messing. He maybe made him do a bit of gym work, was there, or something like that. But let him off and gave him a bit of freedom, and he'll probably come back in and probably be man of the match the weekend now or something like that.
Did I see as well, for just yourself, in terms of, of keeping, like you were talking about, trying to balance the two and keeping going in the gym or whatever. Did I see that you had run 14K in a club championship match there a few weeks ago? You did it up on Instagram.
That I ran 14K?
Yeah.
I could have run maybe, it might have been 8 or 9 mile maybe anyway. I don't know if that's 14K now. I'd have to check that out.
I think I saw you put it up, and that's incredible. That was to cover that distance in a game is madness. I know we're getting away from the hurdle here for a while, but she's
miles is about 14K, so that sounds about right.
That's unreal. You must be fairly tearing it up and threaded. So
well, I was playing a working wing forward in that match, so I kind of had a bit of a free roll for the club. So now, that was probably including the warm-up as well. But, I don't know. I was looking at James Miller did 14K, but that was a 90-minute match. But yeah, I did like something like 8 mile or something in the game. So it was kind of a lot of unseen work. But look at people are probably having me down as a bit of a robot in cornerback, just going around and being that. But you know, I'm able to kick a bit of ball and do a bit of running when I want.
Yeah, definitely. That was really impressive. I know just from looking at we had Shane Mangan on the podcast as well. He works a lot with GPS systems and all that. Like, if we look at analysing some of the stats that we'd see, like with the footballers, like we're saying James Miller, so if you see 14K, I think that's one of that is possibly the most I've ever seen of either a soccer player or a GEA player. I know not everyone will share their stats afterwards, but that was seriously impressive.
Thanks so much. You're not sure if it's true or not, but sure.
What was I going to say? Was that the same game as well as the black card? The goalkeeper got the black card and didn't, and you took the penalty against him then, did you, before he went off? What was going on there?
That's right. Aaron Ennis, one of my best friends, got pulled down in the box by the Dundee goalie. He was first round in the championship. So Richie Morris, the referee, came in and gave him a black card, and David Jennings, who had known well as well, the very goalie, was walking off the field, and just my marker just casually said to Richie, the referee, "Sure, you have to stay in goals, Richie, for the penalty." And Richie kind of looked at him and says, "Yeah, he does.
It's not the rules.
So David Jennings, yeah, I just think he was just taking a chance, and fair play to the chap for saying it. You know, he was just trying to get his goalie in the goals. So thankfully, you know, it went in the net anyway, and probably I wasn't concentrating on that at all. I was just concentrating on where I was going to put the ball. It would have caused a bit of mayhem if Geno saved it, you know, looking back on it. So, but we got the win anyway, and the ball went in the net, so all's well as ends well.
You've got Longford in a couple of weeks, and Longford went really well in Division 3 this year. You struggled a little bit in Division 2. Did you find how much... you've got the long-awaited Auburn Cup final as well. Then this again that we've had. Like, this is a long, long time coming. But you had obviously the club month, and you played a couple of games in the club championship. Was there much meet activity going on during that time? Training sessions or meetings or anything like that? And also then, like, do you find that right? You struggled a little bit in Division 2, got out of it, having a break and coming back and starting fresh for a championship was a benefit, or would you rather kept going?
No, I think, like, in fairness, we were let back. Genuinely, we were let back to our clubs, with no county stuff. We went off and we played our two games, and you know, you're completely let back to your club, and that's fair, because that's where you started off, and that's where you gotta give them as much time and kind of respect, as the county. So we did that, and just came back in then to meet training again. I don't really know about this club month. Look, it's a bit, I don't know, it's a bit bizarre, but because you hear some counties that are not playing any games at all, and then other counties are playing 4 or 5 games. So I just thought, you know, it should be a blanket rule for everyone. You know, you play your club games or you play your championship games, and that's it. But yeah, we came back along with, thankfully, 1 or 2 games, and just back in meet training now, as you said, a Burn Cup final and the Longford match. We didn't go as well as we wanted in Division 2 of the league. We made no secret that we wanted to try and get up to Division 1. I'm harping on a bit. That's where all the best teams are playing in hurling and football, and that's where you want to get to be playing week in, week out. So I think it's Longford's first game in years down in Pierce Park, home match, so they'll be revved up for it, and we'll have to be ready, you know. I'm going in with my eyes, you know, wide open for that match. Like, Longford are waiting in the long grass for us big time.
Yeah, now Longford, we've been talking about it all year, actually, that Longford have won. They've lost in the first round of the Leinster Championship, I think, 9 years in a row, and they've won the first round of the qualifiers 9 years in a row. So we've been talking about them throwing the Meath game to make sure they get the La Decima in the qualifiers, but I suppose you guys can't rely on that.
We did Dennis Connerton on the show a few weeks ago. We're trying to convince him.
Yeah, we told Dennis to do it, but I don't think he's listed those for some reason. I don't know why, but I mean, like, it is going to be an interesting one, because I think that, like, it's just a county like Longford, when they get that sort of feeling that there's a bit of momentum there, there'll be a big crowd at that match, and like, it is going to be a bit of a cauldron for you guys to go into. It's not the best first round tie, is it?
No, it is a tricky one. Like, it really, really is a tricky one for us. There's always, like, as you said, like they've won a lot of big scalps in the qualifiers. Okay, right. I didn't know that they hadn't won a first round in that long, but you know, they've chopped a few big names in the qualifiers. So as I'm saying, like they're in the long grass waiting for us. And like I can see, you know, we can see what's coming, so we got to be prepared for big time. You know, I would have known about Longford football because one of my best friends in the village here would have went to boarding school down in Mells and would have always told me, you know, how much love to have for the football down there. So, yeah, it's a big one, but where else you want to be, it's what you do all the training for. So,
yeah,
a couple of weeks' time and looking forward to it now, I have to say, at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Summer gets going pretty quickly from here. Mickey, listen, thanks a million for talking to us. Best of luck in the year ahead with Mead. Hopefully, if you guys are going too well, we won't have too much time for you on this. It's the so-called weaker podcast. You know, we don't yet consider Mead a weaker football county anyway. But do you think the hurlers can...
Jeez, you don't know. I hope or not.
We'll wait and see. Yeah. I know. Do you think the hurlers can stay in the John McDonagh this year? That's basically the aim, isn't it? To get a win or two and just to stay in it.
I think so. I think it is, yeah. The boys are under a bit of pressure, but they've carried it home. They've watched me away now again. Look, they've a lot of tricky games, but I think just getting a win and trying to stay up maybe and stay in that position is the most important thing, you know. If you were to finish bottom, I think if they play the close game winners, which is a bit bizarre as well at the same time, that they win a competition and they don't come straight up, which I find like baffling. But yeah, hopefully the boys can sneak a win or two and stay up. I think that'll definitely be the aim for the hurlers.
Great stuff. Well, listen, best of luck to them, best of luck to yourself as well with the footballers over the summer. Thanks a million, Mickey.
Thanks for contacting me, lads. Appreciate it. Thank you.
A case of daylight robbery. Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Well,
this is outrageous.
That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
The decision.
Oh, that's disgraceful.
This is all wrong. This is all wrong.
Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
Lovely stuff, Mickey Burke. I nearly said Mickey Rourke again there. What's wrong with me? Thank God I didn't make that mistake when I was talking to himself. But one of the great characters of GAA.
Yeah,
one of
he
the
is.
Soundest lads as well.
I've done the maths and he is right. 9 mile. I was right. Well, I was right and he was right in that 9 mile equates to 14.4 kilometres, which is incredible. Yeah. I think the average distance a county midfielder will run in 70 minutes is like... I mean, if you're hitting 10K, 11K, you're doing, you know, that's a good solid day's work. To hit 14 is madness.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just measuring this. Like what I've seen before is just I'm going off the wrong basis. But I've never seen anyone doing 14 yet. As he said, the most I've ever seen from anyone in any of these stats is James Miller doing the 13.5K or whatever it was. I was reading about that in the Liverpool-Man City game. Yeah. I've never seen anyone get that in 90 minutes.
Mickey will be clocking up a lot more mileage in the qualifiers after Longford being made.
We talked up Longford a little bit there, as did Mickey, but it makes me think all the more that Mead will probably just go in and win by 5 points at this stage, you know.
Yeah, we'll talk about that game. That game's the 27th of May.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
let's,
couple of weeks. So
we'll do a full hour-long preview of that
specific
game. Mead
people more worried about their massive doubleheader against Westmead this week in the O'Byrne Cup final and against a really big one that they have to win. And it's going to be uphill, really, because Westmead look really good in the John McDonagh Cup. Other fixtures in that this week, on Saturday, Antrim versus Carlow. Both of them won in week one. And Kerry versus Laois, which is another must win for both of those teams on Sunday. So, that's that. We've also got the Connacht Football Championship, small game between Galway and Mayo, coming up this weekend. We've got the Ulster Championship kicking off, the preliminary round between Cavan and Donegal. But most importantly, it's the first round of the Leinster Football Championship, lads.
Mm-hmm.
Three massive games. Laois versus the Division 4 champions versus Wexford, who were relegated to Division 4 this year. We've got Offaly, who were relegated to Division 4 this year, versus Wicklow, who stayed in Division 4. And we've got Louth, who were relegated to Division 3, having lost all seven of their games in Division 2. And they will play Carlow, who were promoted from Division 4. And these two teams will be Division 3 what would you call them?
Rivals.
Next, rivals.
Colleagues.
Next year, yeah. So they're the three games. Mark, you've been, well, I suppose, directing other people around interviews over the last
not
week
even directing
or so.
I just happened to have been sent the interviews that PJ went out of his way to do. Once again, we had his chat with Pete McGrath last week, but this he was also talking to John Sugrue, the Leash manager at the Leinster launch, and Sugrue talked about how different it is to be a manager. He's obviously a trainer with Kerry before, so he talked about the difference between being a manager and being a trainer and the time commitment that he couldn't believe that it comes that we never really think about. And also the thing we highlighted before in the podcast, which was Graham Brodie, the Leash goalkeeper, going on becoming a fly goalkeeper, a new trend that's happening a lot in the GAA. But he actually said that that's something that he's done of his own volition.
The main challenge is my watch and time. It's it's very simple. As a trainer or as a coach, you tend to liaise an awful lot with one person. That's the manager and maybe one or two of the selectors, and just try and pick brains as to what needs to be put into training sessions. When you're in management, you have to liaise with players an awful lot. You have to liaise with county board. You have to liaise with logistics guys in our own team, the trainer, everything like that. So there's an awful lot of time attached to it. It is a monster of a project with regard to time consumption. So I think that's the biggest difference.
Did you get here with a view, you kind of experimented with you being a goalkeeper in a more expansive role than would have been traditional?
No, I think that I think Graham, to a certain degree, has done that himself. Graham is he's a very inventful guy, and he's got an open mind with regard to what ways he can positively influence how the team plays. So we work with him on that front and encourage him and see if it fits into our game plan. And if it does, great. And if it doesn't, then we're going to have to try and curtail it. But like so far, he's been very influential for us.
Do you think there's tactical advantages to be made there, using the goalkeeper more defensively?
It's hard to know. Like, I mean, they're just different looks at things. And look. If it lends positively to how a team plays and how they approach a game, I don't think there's any major issue with it. You know, so Graham has been very positive for us so far this year.
Fly goalie is pretty safe in football, isn't it? There's always someone can cover for it.
Yeah, I think it's the next step. It seems to be like so many different counties doing it. Monaghan the same.
Most counties play 14 defenders in front of him, so surely one of them.
The whole quarterback thing is really interesting as well. The way Rory Began seems to be a man that the defenders actually, they'll pass it around at the back and then pass it back to Began, who picks out a runner 70 yards up the field with a pinpoint pass. That is like, it really we joke, you know, we'd say it in football as well sometimes, like, oh, Christian Eriksen's like a corner quarterback. Like, it really is like a quarterback what they're doing, because the way the two blanket defenses work now, it's like you've got all your team,
there's room,
and there's room. Yeah. And next thing he just pings it.
But in a more attractive way than, say, Paddy Bonner being Ireland's playmaker at Italian 90.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it is more like a quarterback. Yeah. It's not a hoofer. There's two different things there. It's not like, I don't know, like watching, like, if you watch the 91 All-Ireland final on YouTube, right, Conor Deegan, who was a great player or whatever, but he gets the ball, his job is to win the ball, and he literally then just hoofs up the field. And then it's start again from midfield, you know. If you're kicking the ball 70 yards now, it's a beautiful diagonal pass that lobs right into the hands of a wing
this
forward.
Thing goalkeeper as well. It's like, and it's something that I never understand it. You never do it in a GA. You'd rarely ever see it in GA training sessions. Like, if you think, can anyone think of any drill in Gaelic football where you're doing a kick passing drill where, say, Gavin, you're sitting straight in front of me here now, where you stand facing away from me and you go running up towards the field, up towards the goals of playing in, and my job is to kick it to you who's running directly away from me. Every GAA kick passing drill is either running sideways across me or running straight towards me, which means that every single time, if that's all the kick pass you know, you're guaranteed to kick a ball to a man who's not facing the way you're playing. So if you look at Rory Began, his pick pass, and Stephen Cluxton the same, they're kicking it to lads who are barely fit. Like, they turn around and look over their shoulder.
They're wide receivers.
Well, there's Rory looking at me. I'm going to make a bolt here up the pitch. Exactly like a quarterback in American football. Mm. You're actually receiving the ball, sprinting towards the goals you're playing.
But I mean, the wing forward or whoever it is that's doing it has to be thinking of themselves as a wide receiver as well, in the same way. Like, it is just as, the relationship, it is a two-way thing as well. Like, you know, you need to know that you're making a run for that ball to land 20 yards in front of where you are now. Like, exciting. Leash are going to beat Wexford this weekend?
We'll talk about that when we get to the accumulator.
Well, then what about Offaly and Wicklow? Another Kerry man involved with Offaly that Gavin has actually been out busting his ass for this company.
Yeah, Brendan Keeley left the Kerry panel last year, having won an All-Star in 2015 and an All-Ireland in 2014. Joined up with fellow Kerry man Stephen Wallace on the coaching ticket there in Offaly. He's the goalkeeping coach. Finished off last year as a goalkeeping coach and continued on in the role this year. He was interesting, actually, on what you talked about, like fly keepers. Now, there is a full interview with Brendan going up on site at some point this week whenever I can get my arse in gear and start writing it. But there is a little bit of controversy bubbling in Offaly at the moment ahead of this championship game, because Keane Johnson, their hot young thing, friend of the show, he's not allowed play for the Offaly seniors this weekend, despite having lined out for them in the O'Byrne Cup and all through the National League. The reason for this is a rule, not from the GA, but from the Offaly County Board, which prevents any of their under 20 players from lining out for the senior squad. So let's listen in for Brendan's reaction to being denied access to one of their star players.
Yeah, there's a rule in place. I think the county board, so he's under 20, that's his age group, so that's the level he plays with. It is what it is now. Like, that was in the news during the week. The focus, like, it's disappointing. You'd love to have him with you. Like, he's a very good footballer, great potential. But we'll focus on Sunday now. What we have, a panel of players who've been there for the last however many months, training away. So, like, it's opportunities for someone else to put their hand up.
With the rule about Keane, like, I mean, that's an awfully specific rule. Like, David Clifford can play for Kerry, etc. And there's however many counties where it's enforced. How do you feel about it? It's a bit annoying that it's obviously only in you're being hamstrung and the rest of the country isn't, or can you see the positives from the county board's point of view?
Yeah, like, no doubt there's obviously logic behind bringing in the rule. You know, they're doing what they think is best for young players' development. I don't know, in terms of when you're working with players or whatever, you don't look at a player's age if you're selecting a team. You know, you look at, are they up to it, are they playing well. Different counties, different teams, have different ways of doing things. That's the card we're dealt, you know, and we have to get on with it.
Yeah.
And that's what we'll do. Like, you know, it is what it is.
Long term, is this any harm?
No, I don't think so. You know, everything's kind of short term.
Protecting a young guy, you know, it's not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No,
the end of the world.
I would be broadly in favor of it.
Hopefully, aren't going to win the All Ireland this year, but they might be planning on doing it in 5 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Possibly, yeah. It's just,
they're not.
So for example, like, David Clifford is fine playing for Kerry, etc. Like, this is just an awfully only rule. So you can hear that Brendan is quite diplomatic on that, but you do get the sense that they are a little bit frustrated by it. And Keane himself is frustrated by it.
What do you think, Mark? Protect lads?
I don't know. If you're good enough, surely old enough. I know it's a case of maybe trying to develop a team spirit, then maybe get him, you know, keep him with the under-20s. Maybe they win something, they stick together, they go up through the ranks. But at the same time, you know, are you stilting his development by doing it?
Maybe.
Like, is he better off playing with seniors?
Against better players. He did play with them in the league, though.
Yeah.
You know, championship's a different thing.
It is, of course. Yeah.
Dry ground, you know.
It's an interesting idea, anyway. And look, even if it's wrong, I think I'm actually happy to see Offaly thinking kind of outside the box a little bit, you know.
Definitely. And we always complain that county managers have too much control over county boards and various things.
Yeah.
This is the opposite.
Yeah. Often we are kind of like derided here as being a Carlow first podcast. But Carlow first show. We got caught up and we all partied as Carlow came out of Division 4, let's face it. But we're kind of trying to redress that somewhat. But last week we spoke to Pete McGrath, the Loud manager, and this week we've got another Loud guest, so we're ignoring Carlow completely before they launch on their Leinster Championship Odyssey.
Yeah, I'd also like to point out, just ahead of the Carlow Loud game, we're between WhatsApp numbers at the moment, so just in case you're listening, Sean Gannon or Paul Broderick, if you can use my WhatsApp, I think, Sean, or you can just tweet us or something, send us in your match reports if you're doing one.
We're easy to find, lads.
But yeah, the WhatsApp isn't working at the moment, but
you know, like, blame Facebook.
Yeah,
that's like, you know, that sort of, my phone is broke, message me on Facebook when you were like 15.
You call it out live on the podcast. Yeah.
Sorry, maybe you didn't text me back, my phone is broke, didn't get to see you. You're like, yeah, texting some young one.
So let's not disrespect Carlo or Loud too much more.
Loud, Andy McDonald, he was talking to PJ about the competition that Loud actually face, it's something that they don't actually face a lot. Gavin's lost. He's talking about the competition that Loud face by having two big soccer clubs in the country's smallest county in Drogheda and Dundalk.
You can see both worlds. Like, look at Monaghan there. They've a small county, and they're flying at the minute. You know, their club football scene is brilliant, and then they're competing. I think they put up the Dublin in the league. I think about Dublin in the league, and you know, and then you look at the likes of Dublin. They've a massive population, and they're playing well. So it kind of works both ways. Like, we can look at ourselves in County Loud. You don't have to go outside the county. You have two of the biggest towns in Ireland, Drogheda and Dundalk, massive populations, and we're not getting enough from them towns, whether it be underage or the, in fairness, the coaching games there, the lads who are working there are doing great work, and that's how you need to start at grassroots level. But at the minute, we're not getting enough from the likes of the town clubs. You have five or six in Drogheda, six or seven in Dundalk, and something needs to be done, and hopefully it is being done. Well, it is being done at the minute, and we'll reap the rewards in years to come. But at the minute, we're not getting enough what we should be.
There are reasons for that in the past?
I don't know. It's tough, you know. Like, we have, if you look at Monaghan, there's no real soccer teams there. It's hurling. It's just Gaelic, whereas we have, not making excuses, far from it, I'm just stating that we have two League of Ireland soccer teams, and with Dundalk going well, it's great to see. I'm a sports person, I wouldn't begrudge a team doing well, but a lot of people are the young lads nowadays are seeing the Dundalk jersey instead of a Loud jersey, nothing wrong with that, but probably something we need to counteract.
Andy McDonald there, Loud captain, they're playing with Carlow this weekend.
Yeah, it's a big, big game.
And Carlow will surely batter them, won't they?
Well,
Division 2 versus Division 4.
Yeah, but you know, Carlow, top of Division, or second in Division 4.
Interesting you say this.
They've got the momentum.
Because that has led us into my accumulator for this week. The accumulator is back. Okay. And in betting form.
Yeah, we forgot about it for a while there. Yeah. I was supposed there was no games there for about 2 months.
And I accidentally tipped both Exiles to win last week. So we can say that.
When you say accidentally, you...
Yeah. You did.
You, what did you
well,
do?
I
you
did, sorry. Them, like, no, I did. So, yeah, no, I did. But I didn't realise I was doing it in accumulator form.
Oh, yeah.
And I was, of course, hopelessly wrong.
I did at least say Sligo would win. And I was very close in New York.
I went to put a fiver on this accumulator this morning and discovered that I didn't have a fiver in my account because I put it on Huddersfield to get relegated yesterday morning, and within 12 hours they had guaranteed their survival. So I'd like to I'd like if Huddersfield would reimburse me.
Yeah. But it's also a nice caveat for anyone listening if they're going to take this accumulator too seriously.
So we start off with Louth and Carlow. I'm going with a Carlow win in that. That's a 5-4.
Okay. Donegal
against Cavan.
Donegal
plus 3 on the handicap.
Oh, I like that.
Evens. Kerry against Laois in the Joe McDonagh Cup. Laois to win that at 8-15. And then Wexford against Laois in the Leinster Football Championship.
I would broadly agree with your choices there.
8-1.
Congratulations. I would say 8-1.
92 Wexford, euro back for a tenner bet.
So Laois to win that game.
Laois to beat Wexford.
Jeez, I can't see anything wrong with any of them.
I told you.
I don't know about... Like, that match is in Kerry.
The Donegal
Kerry
Laois
game is in. I wonder how Leash's confidence are after losing that first match to Westmeath.
I don't know. It was a very close game. Only lost one goal.
I know.
I think the Donegal Cavan thing, I'm not sure. I think Donegal could hammer Cavan.
No, that won't happen. I'm telling
you. Hammer them to the point that they'll never want to play football again.
Cavan are going to draw. Cavan are going to win the game.
Oh, sorry, 17, 18 points.
Cavan are going to lead the game for a long time. It's going to end up in a draw, and then they're going to get hammered in the replay.
What?
No,
that's the way it always works.
No replay.
Have you got any odds on...
It'll be a draw, it'll go to extra time.
Have you got any odds on Donegal minus 18?
Go away, you. Finish up the podcast.
He's only a blackguard. Sure,
Louth against Carlow is the dodgy one. Carlow 5-4, but as you said, Louth are in bad form, but they're a Division 2 team. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think
Carlow... Brendan Murphy's
like, Louth have played Meath, Cork, Cavan, Roscommon,
Tipperary,
Clare. Tipperary this year, you know? I don't know. I think, they're battle-hardened. They did lose all those games.
At the same time, if it was Laois against Loud, you'd back Laois. and Carlo were Carlo should have beaten Leash.
You're right. You're right. That's exactly. Yeah, I'm sticking. I'm my Jesus. I've never listened to you before, Mark, and we haven't had a winner yet. We've been very close on some of these.
Yeah.
Less so when it's me. More so when it's been Gavin and Mark. But we've been very close on some of these. I might have a wee flutter. You wouldn't want to be, you know, no more than a fiver here. You know, what'd you say? 8-1.
8.2-1.
8.2-1. Right, great. So, well, listen, the championship is back. We've got so many games. I didn't even get a chance really to properly mention that the Christy Ring Cup is getting underway on Saturday as well. And we've got Mayo, I think, are hurling Carlo, I think, this week. They're playing Wicklow. You've got Kildare versus Roscommon, Derry versus London, and Down versus Armagh in the Ulster Heavy Group B of that. So we'll keep an eye on that for you. They've got all the games we mentioned earlier. Also in the actual Lee McCart, the Leinster Senior Hurling Championship is getting started. Donegal, Kilkenny, or Dublin, Kilkenny, Donegal, Dublin, Kilkenny, and Offaly, Galway. So it could be like they're two kind of like, you know, weaker counties, I suppose, going up against juggernauts. Yeah. So that's something that we hopefully, if something happens, we'll be talking about them next week.
Offaly is a juggernaut. Yeah.
You don't think the All Ireland champions are a juggernaut? we'll leave it at that. So we'll leave it at that top there. Actually, before we go, we've got something else.
Yeah, so actually, if there are any journalists out there listening to this who understand the idea of external validation, it's very important in our daily lives to write something. And we always, you know, always hope that it will get picked up by a number of reliable media outlets around the world and, you know, travel the world with more importantly, your employer's byline.
This is the so-called weaker podcast you're
attached.
Talking about here,
yeah, no. But it is something we discussed on last week's podcast. You may remember Leinster and Dublin nutritionist Daniel Davey was talking about Tadhg Furlong's love of potatoes. Believe it or not, a news story on an Irishman not liking potatoes has played well overseas. it's been picked up by a lot of rugby sites and a lot of New Zealand media in particular. I'm looking at stuff.co.nz, which I believe is the second most reliable news source in New Zealand after New Zealand Herald. The headline reads, Irish rugby player Tadhg Furlong addicted to the most Irish thing ever, potatoes. A nutritionist has told Irish rugby player Tadhg Furlong that he's, quote, having too many potatoes and may even be addicted. Leinster nutritional coach Daniel Davey said Furlong would eat as many as 6 to 10 potatoes a day, Balls.ie reported, and then ran my quotes. It's such a very kind of austere way of reporting it. I'm now looking at rugbypass.com. Ireland prop Furlong battling, quote, potato addiction. Balls out of Europe. Irish said Tadhg Furlong is said to be battling a potato addiction, according to his team's nutritionist, at least. Balls.ie, that's us, are reporting that the 120 kilo lion is consuming as many as 6 to 10 potatoes a day. Leinster nutritional coach Daniel Davey says that the prop is struggling to keep his love of the starch root vegetable.
Oh, wonderful. That's one of those, you don't want to say potato again.
under control. So there you go. Our colleague PJ Brown responded to this in Slack by saying that article makes it sound like Furlong is going to be found lying in a Dublin alleyway next to an empty bag of Roosters.
What a way to do this. I just point out something that it without, you know, stereotyping too much, seeing as that's what they're doing. It wouldn't be the first time that New Zealand media in particular would jump on an Irish stereotype and have a bit of fun about potatoes and stuff like that. Not the most...
Have they done it before?
New Zealand talking about Irish people is the last acceptable form of racism.
Oh.
Oh, consistent.
Really?
Yeah. Consistent. Look at... Generally, any time they're talking about a rugby team, they will throw in some kind of potato reference. In this obvious a way where they're actually talking about a potato
literally
addiction.
Literally a potato addiction. I feel absolutely terrible actually being responsible for this.
Throwing it out there, we should just clarify for the record that Daniel Davey wasn't actually claiming that he was addicted.
No, we're just saying he loves
potatoes.
His spuds.
He just loves his spuds.
So, I love my spuds.
Yeah, we all love our spuds.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
And I like the fish and chips. And the players like the fish and chips. We'll see you next week.